You're about to hear a preview of Partially Examined Life supporter exclusive content. To learn how to get the whole thing, check out partiallyexaminedlife.com/support.
Hey, it's the Partially Examined Life. We're doing a little nightcap discussion with a special guest. Chris, introduce yourself.
My name's Chris Tsunami. I'm an amateur philosopher from Columbus, Ohio. Somebody who has been kind of peripherally associated with the Pell team for a little while. I did some content writing for the blog a few years ago, and I'm also currently working on the long-awaited book project with the Pell team.
Yes, we will talk much more about the book on another meeting that Wes shows up to, but today it's just me and you, and hey, Seth.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Hey, Dylan.
Hey, everybody.
And we thought we'd just talk informally. Chris, what's your center? I know you've been on pretty much Pop a couple times, but we've never actually had you on a philosophy per se discussion. What is your central interest as reflected in some of the things that you picked out for the book as editor?
Probably social and political. I'm really interested in what decisions we make. I'm definitely sort of old school, more on the metaphysical, mystical side of things, which I know is not in vogue in modern philosophy at all. But I have a real appreciation for some of the older traditions, so the ancient Greek, so the ancient Chinese, and just some of the other traditions. I like the big questions, you know, meaning of life type things. Less interested in sort of the really detail oriented philosophy.
You'll enjoy our Aristotle sequence then, that we're in the middle of right now. Or not.
the mystical tradition, what, because there's nothing, we just did, you know, in our whole, I guess, Taoism, Lao Tzu, but the otherwise, our Chinese philosophy was mostly practically oriented. Even our approach to Taoism on that episode, we didn't detect very clear metaphysical positions, whereas clearly he was still saying, hey, rulers, here's how, at least in a very abstract way, how you should act toward your subjects to make you a successful ruler. It was still very practical.
I mean, I definitely feel like the metaphysical is practical. Again, I know that's not sort of a popular opinion, but if I had to kind of really tie myself to one tradition, I'd say probably I'm most closely a Neoplatonist, but I definitely resonate with that kind of approach in other traditions, such as Taoism.
Sort of understanding what things are as informing what we ought to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're actually up on Plotinus?
I have not read as much Plotinus as I should have, given how much I like his view on things, but I would say I'm in tune with his interpretations of Plato. So
that's a very uncommon sentence, Chris. I have not read as much Plotinus as I ought to have.
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
Well, I'm hereby inviting you on our Plotinus episode, because we've tried to book this for a few times. We had, what's the name of the guy that was on our policing episode from school with us, Seth?
Oh my gosh, I feel terrible. I'm blanking.
Phil Hopkins. Sorry, apologies to Phil. But yes,
apologies, but yes.
Not apologies to Phil, because I went around with Phil for like a year saying, hey, you want to come back on this Plotinus episode? And then he would hedge and haw, and then he had things going on. And then, so Chris, that's wonderful.
I would love to do it, although I have to give you fair warning. So back when I was in college a million years ago, I took a course on Plato, and my roommate reported back to me that nobody understood anything I said in class, including the teacher, because my perspective on it was apparently so outside of the ordinary.
Chris, we really have to work on your elevator pitch.
Okay,
well, that's not the way you sell yourself, brother.
Yes, salesmanship is not my strength. I will freely admit to that.
Well, hopefully our approach, hey, here's the text, let's talk about specific things in it, means that mostly we should be understandable. I don't know if it works though, way often, you know, consistently.
Well, I do feel like I've gotten better at communication over the years, so maybe that will be helpful.
That's really pretty crucial too. I feel like in undergrad, if I was going to just pipe up with something that was supposed to matter and sum up sort of my whole impression of the reading that we are doing, it would be a thicket and it would be hard to follow. And hopefully doing this for 1,000 hours, podcasting has helped with that a little bit, as well as grad school, of course.
When I was teaching, especially freshmen, it was one of the categorical features was that they didn't know how to have a conversation. And they had a very, very hard time expressing what they had to say in a line.
Yeah, I remember when one of the podcasts I was editing, you had a comment about how your students would always want to go out to lunch with you, and then that they would just get there and just sit there and stare at you.
It wasn't all of them, but it was a common feature. And it was one of those things that is revealed that they wanted to talk about something, but they weren't sure how to get started. And also sometimes I think they just, you know, when you're a professor, you know, you have a kind of, for a lot of students, you're have a hierarchical relationship with them. You know, you're, you know, somebody super important and they want to get to know you or want to ask you questions or want to learn something, but they also are nervous about it. And so I think there's as much as often like just nervousness, but you do end up having to do some work, you know, on it.
It did make me go back and think about like all the times I sought my professors out and ask myself, like, what was that like from their side?
I found myself reflecting on my own conversations with my own professors a lot when I would talk to students.
There's a little bit of that dynamic in when we do live shows.
Yeah.
Some people are not shy at all about coming up and introducing themselves and saying something. And then you see other people kind of hovering on the periphery. And I find myself reaching out to them, you know, and they might stand there. And then their significant other who cares nothing for us will say something like, he's a big fan or she's a big fan. Yeah. And like, okay, well. Yeah, I think it's really important to bring people like that in. I've heard the best of celebrities are very kind like that. They're very gracious.
It's interesting because you guys really are kind of niche celebrities. Like, there's a certain segment of people who are really, really excited and awed and, you know, just impressed to be in your presence, right?
Yes. I describe us as minor internet celebrities to distinguish from other forms of media. And also be very clear about the scope of our recognition.
Yeah, it was interesting. One of the episodes that I was editing for the book was the book on celebrity. So that was kind of an interesting take on that. It was interesting for me to see, too, that the few times you guys had celebrity guests on, sometimes people who are household names, like, they were just as impressed to meet you guys. Maybe more so in some ways.
Hmm. I really just hesitate to even think about our status has anything to do with celebrity, but there is something of fandom that, especially at the live shows, that I've experienced. And I guess a little bit, you know, there's something like that that happens when you're a professor too, where at least within your school, if you remember being a student, you know, students talk about their professors. And so when you're a professor, you realize that your students talk about you. And so there's something of that that's happening where you're a public figure of some sort. And then this notion of fandom, of the way in which, you know, I have people or media or things that I'm a fan of that I just appreciate. And I, you know, would love to just meet the people who do that, appreciating that on the other side. So I get sympathy with that. And I have appreciated, I haven't met that many people who that I'm a fan of, but the few times I have, I've appreciated their just sort of just generosity of spirit, you know. It's fun for me to see people like that who are fans of things. So
I'm trying to remember who it was I read, but it might have been Samuel Delaney, who's an author who I really enjoy a lot. But whoever it was talking about, especially writers in terms, and he said, well, you know, you don't really want to meet the writers that you love because what you love in them is their writing, not necessarily the person behind the writing. And people always expect it's going to be the same person. Of course, it really isn't. You know, the person in the writing is a creation. And, you know, there might be a month of work that went into a sentence. But on the page, you read it and it's, you know, it takes you a second to read.
I think it's worth remembering that, you know, these kinds of variations of personality, my take is that celebrities vary in their personality and their alignment with their like the kind of impression you might get out of them, out of their work, just as much as people vary in general. You know, I think I've said on the podcast my story with meeting Richard Rorty when I was an undergrad. And, you know, I was a huge Richard Rorty fan. I mean, I wrote a sort of an undergraduate senior seminar paper and stuff like that. And just meeting him was a real kind of disappointment. And later on, I talked to people who were my peers who, you know, had met him before and knew him. And just his personality for a guy who talks so much about conversation and kind of had a kind of, to me, overall kind of upbeat, intellectually engaged writing style. He was just not that way in person at all.
If that sounds like the kind of thing that you want to hear more about, then please go to partiallyexaminedlife.com/support. Thanks for listening.